from stpcatalyst.com.
All right, I want to welcome everybody to Catalyst Session number 140. I'm Paul Wilborn. I'll be your host tonight. And we're going to be talking to the guy who has been your host for 139 Catalyst Sessions. You talk about somebody who has crawled their way through the pandemic. Bill DeYoung has done yeoman's work with this show. Bill, how are you?
I'm doing great, Paul. I'm doing great. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing good. And I was trying to see which backdrop you might go with. You're going with the Snoopy backdrop. Really? There have been various backdrops during this time, right?
In honor of you. Yeah, I discovered that certain backdrops just don't work, you know, depending on which bad haircut I had at which time. Sometimes the backgrounds would make me look like Esquivel or something. Early Lyle Lovett, and my hair would...
Yeah, you got to be careful. And I'd like to just start off with something very important, which is how many of your rock and roll t-shirts did you wear during the course of this? Because I've seen a Jethro Tull t-shirt. I've seen a few other t-shirts that have made an appearance.
I own a Jethro Tull Living in the Past shirt, which I'm very proud of. I have a shirt for Cat Stevens' Catch Bullet 4, which I may have worn a few times. Those are the only two I have.
Okay.
I wear a Catalyst shirt a lot because Joe Hamilton told me I should.
You should wear the Catalyst shirt. All right. Well, this is good. Well, I like this. Is a classic backdrop. There have been a couple of them, but I think this is good.
This is my go-to Catalyst session shirt where I don't look terribly fat. And, you know, black is the all-purpose color. So
always good. It's always good.
So, all right.
All right, the next very serious topic I want to talk about is, I went back, of course, and listened to a few of these, and I was involved in some of them, and one of your most famous lines that I can't remember who you said this to, but you famously said, the first version of the Catalyst sessions were all pretty terrible. I was pushing all the wrong buttons. It was a disaster. I would like to say I was the first one.
Yeah,
and so I was that disaster.
One and two, yeah. Yeah, do you remember that? I think we were 15 minutes late.
Yeah.
Live at that time. And I had literally no idea what I was doing. And I had Joe and Kira on the other end who ostensibly knew what they were doing. And apparently none of us did. And you guys, I have this image of you and Eugenie sitting there poking buttons on your computer saying, hear you.
And Are we on? It's almost like the Can You Hear Me Now commercial.
We had a few of those in the beginning.
And You figured it out. And, you know.
If I didn't do them live, it would cut off a lot of the sort of problematic things like, you know, Zoom being too busy or Facebook cutting out. So, you know, since midway through the series, we just started recording them in advance, which is what you and I are doing now. We won't even recorded this in August, folks. We've been, Paul and I have been off vacation for a while now.
We're not around. It's all about hitting the deadline, but Bill, you know, from the old journalist standpoint. I think you've talked to a lot of people.
Yeah.
But the overarching thing that seemed to be about was touching base with the artistic community in St. Petersburg and occasionally beyond St. Petersburg during this lockdown time. Would that be, what was that sort of, was that what was in your mind when you started this?
Was when the curtain came down, which is this sort of metaphor I use much in my writing probably. Remember how frightening it was? Because not that it isn't frightening now in a different way, but none of us knew what we were up against. And it was sort of like the world, you know, is going to be gone for a while, you know. And there two things hit me really early on. One is that there's no performance. For a while, there was no visual art. There was nothing. What am I going to write about? So there was that selfish thing of like, I need to find something to do. And the other thing was that it would be cool to have a sort of what are those old like soup cans with string where you talk like telephones, to a little something to connect us all. Like your best friend lives in the apartment across there and you can't really see him, but you can talk on this thing. We can communicate all of us while we're in our own little rooms, you're in your little room and Helen Hansen French is in hers and Bob Devin Jones and, you know, Jane Buckman, everybody, all the, they're in their little, but if we connect once a day, it's kind of like saying, hey, we're all still here and we're all just as scared and we're all wondering what the hell we're going to do with our art and with our business. And it felt like a good idea from the first day. And I'm so grateful to all the people who stuck through it, through all the technical snafus that marred the early days at haircuts.
Yeah, I think what you, there was another one I watched and you were doing something. You said, all right, come on, push the right button, Bill.
Oh, yeah. I was always talking to myself, sure. And yeah, it would be like, okay, I'd be talking, say, I'd be talking to David Jenkins from over a job site, and I'd have all these photos ready to go. Now, I'm not a technical person, as you and I have discussed many times. You know,
we don't do math. We don't do technology.
We're one-trick ponies. Well, you can maybe do two or three things. I can do pretty much one, which is, I guess, you know, write. Be curious and write about it. But I'd be talking to David and say, well, I have all these photos that I want to talk with you about from different job site productions, and then I could never get them to come up, or else I'd get one to come up, click the wrong thing, and the whole thing would turn off. You'd have to dial it back up, you know. There was one, I think it was the one where I was talking to Ray Roa from Creative Loafing, which really was a fascinating interview, and the computer just died in the middle of it.
Oh, that's funny.
I mean, so I basically had to edit, when we re-ran it later, and we re-ran it as a video, had to edit the two parts together, so hopefully nobody noticed. It's like, hey, Ray, sorry, calling you back, man, you know?
Well, you had this great line, says, you know, like, one of these days I'm going to have this down. So did you ever feel like you had it down?
Never. No. Even a couple of days, there'd be something where something didn't go right, you know? But that's part of the charm of it. You know, we're just talking. You know, if I'm going to write a story, just like you, I've been doing what I do a very long time. So if I'm going to write a story, I pretty much know, okay, it's going to have a beginning, a middle, and an end, and it's going to at least, elucidate something. It's going to illuminate something is what I mean for somebody, and maybe be entertaining at the same time. And, you know, with basically, this is not my shtick.
Right.
And
we're not video guys, but we're learning.
Than I was, but I'm going back to writing. That's why I decided to stop. One of the reasons, yeah.
One of the fun things that I noticed in going back through a lot of these was that, you know, I think everybody knows you're been a longtime music writer.
Yeah.
And so I really love watching you when you've got like a Robin Zander or Lobo or somebody who's like a musician, because you're right in your wheelhouse with those guys.
And shorthand sometimes.
There was some, what was another line you said, which hold on.
A greatest hits sheet over there, don't you?
Well, it's like, oh, let me, you said this to Robin Zander, let me ask you one more nerd record question.
Yeah.
You're just a music nerd. You've got all that information.
There's a certain kind of, you know this too, there's a certain kind of shorthand that you get when, I've been talking to musicians since I was probably 18.
Right.
You know, in those days it wasn't as a living, but it started to be eventually. And there's a certain shorthand that you develop with people whose kind of routines and the way they look at life kind of is laid out the way it works. I've started to, and I will say, this is one of the happy things about doing the work that I'm doing now, is that I've started to develop that kind of rapport with theater people. And I absolutely love theater people, musicians. Yeah, you know, I don't like the same music I did. Actually, I do like the same music I did, but, and that's part of the problem. I'm getting into that get off my lawn phase.
Get off the lawn, kid.
But I have always really admired actors and dancers and people like that, and was always, especially early when I started doing these kind of interviews, thought I was just so clumsy that I was scaring them off. Like, oh, who is this guy? There's a certain way to talk to different kinds of artists. And this has been great for me to hone that a little bit, you know.
And to open you up, I think, into some new areas, like a Frank Strunk and metal art, you know, but it's not coming from your strong wheelhouse. But when you're talking to Robin Zander, you said, no, but Budokan was before that, and you recorded that, and you did. I don't think you'd research that. That was in your head. Am I right about these things?
About that, though, is that, you know, he knew it too, and he recognized that, you know, right. Sort of like there's a little bit of just shorthand is what I'm talking about. And, you know, Greg Billings was the same way. I was never a huge fan of Stranger, but I knew their history, and I've always been someone who's been involved in Florida-based rock and roll. And I think he responded to that right away. It's sort of like you just, we can cut out the bullshit and just talk.
Mm-hmm.
While understanding that we're still doing something for public consumption. We're not just sort of sitting in a bar yucking it up, you know, where it's no.
You got that knowledge in your head for a lot of that stuff.
Sorry?
I stepped on you. You got that knowledge in your head when it comes to music, especially of a certain the era there, you were especially working in that world.
Well, I've been trying one of the Catalyst sessions that didn't happen. There are a few I wanted to have on here was my friend Stan Lynch, who was the drummer from Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers for all 20 of the hit-making years. And he, at the end of the day, decided he didn't want to do it for reasons of his own. He's got a really cool new project about to come out. But that's another example of, like, I've known Stan for almost 40 years, and we can talk like there's nobody else in the room sometimes, mm-hmm. you know. So that would have been great. And I liked that. But I also liked challenging myself, you know. There are people whom I just respect so much, the Hines or Kristen Shepherd. I had Trish Duggan on here recently, you know, and those are people where I have to feel like, in a way, I have to be really prepared. I can't just like yuck my way through it, even though we laughed a lot. I mean, laughing's been a real hallmark of the Catalyst sessions too, not just at my technical ineptitude.
Have you had time? I mean, you're doing this every day to prepare for some of these folks that you haven't really encountered before. I mean, I look down that list, I would have to do a lot of research to be, you know.
I, in all humility, I would say that that's something I learned early on, was that if you have done no research at all, you're an idiot, go get another job. I say it all the time, you know. And then the rest of it comes down to your quote unquote skill as an interviewer, a conversationalist, as someone who can move the conversation along, you know. But what's always been most important, first and foremost, every single one of these 139 interviews was establishing a connection early on. I mean, you can see it in some of the interviews from early days, the middle period, the recent times, that sometimes it takes a little while to get into a rhythm of conversation with people. But I would say in almost every case, it happened. You know, a lot of these people are used to being, you know, asked questions. And some of them, you know, I've spoken to journalists. I spoke to Bob Woodward. I spoke to Cindy Edwards, who just left Daytime. I spoke right. to Height, the great WFLA journalist. And those people are they got a bullshit detector mile wide. You know, if your question is stupid, they're deft. They know how to not really answer you and make you feel bad in the bargain. But that didn't happen. So I was grateful for that.
Yeah. It's really been amazing, the list of great people that said yes. And obviously, you know, somebody like a Bob Woodward has got a book he wants to promote, but still coming on, it's been great. Is there any others that got away that you really wanted?
I don't think so. I, you know, there's some people I've been talking to. I was really happy that our 100th episode was Ephraim Sykes,
right?
Who I never met, and who I had been trying to track down for a while. And it just circumstances worked out that I finally, I mean, you know who Ephraim is, and was Tony nominated on Broadway.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Unbelievable talent. That one almost got away, but then when I got him, when I connected through his father, Reverend Sykes, who's a wonderful guy, he was like, yeah, sure, I'll do that. And, you know, and that was another one of those things where here's a guy who gets interviewed a lot, you know, and he is in his own, he's very famous and is about to be extremely famous.
More famous, yeah.
But couldn't have been more gracious and was so happy to talk about St. Petersburg, which, you know, like, to me, meant so much to him. I mean, I was born and raised here.
I was saying, speaking of that, why don't you talk just a little bit about your history in St. Pete, because I know you're a local guy.
Yeah, I went to Gibbs High School Performing Arts Facility there.
Mm-hmm.
I played the Fred Astaire role in Finian's Rainbow on stage in our senior production.
I look at you and I think Fred Astaire. I don't know why.
Yeah, I mean, I don't move like the movie's terrible, and our production was pretty bad too. But we had loads of fun. And my point was that was before anybody had put any money into the performing arts at Gibbs. You know, just kind of the old brick building. There we were. We used to play soccer in the dirt field across US 19 from Gibbs. You know, there was no football stadium. There was nothing.
It was not a magnet school for the arts at that point.
No, not at all. That all happened later, and I think it's brilliant. People like Carrie Jadis and like Ephraim Sykes and some of the wonderful people that we know from around here who went through that program and really benefited from it. It's been great. I was away from St. Petersburg for, I don't know, 35 or 40 years or something. And when I came back in 2014, it was an entirely different place. You know, another thing you would have heard me say in the Catalyst sessions a lot when talking to folks involved in the arts in St. Petersburg, I'd always bring it around to me at some point or another, because that's the way I am. And I'd say, you know, when I was coming up here in the 60s and 70s, there was nothing.
There was nothing. I heard that interview, at least one version.
Tumbleweeds going up and down Central Avenue, you know, it was like, you know, those Sergio Leone theme song, you know, that kind of stuff. Nothing. Coyotes in the background, crickets. And I came back and suddenly, look at this place. It's cool. Nobody ever called St. Petersburg cool when I was
there. No. I worked for the Times and the Tribune, and everybody said Tampa was where it's going to happen. And while Tampa was trying to make it happen, St. Pete actually did happen. And I don't know about you, but I...
St. Pete, over there in Temple Terrace.
Over there. I enjoyed my time. You know, Tampa was my hometown. I enjoyed my time covering issues in Tampa when I was doing it in the mid-'80s into the 90s. Yeah. Have you had fun coming back and writing about the town you're from these days for the Catalyst?
That's been a joy because... you know, my early days when I left St. Pete, I wanted to be a rock and roll writer. My mother would say, "Why doesn't Rolling Stone give you a job?" And I'm like, "Mom," but anyway, so I had to go cut my teeth and work in newspapers, really, really working hard and working with some wonderful, wonderful people in Gainesville for many, many years.
Right.
You know, had my first marriage, raised my kids. And by the time I got out of there and started the second part of my life, which involved, you know, another marriage and looking for different things, I didn't care about being a rock and roll writer anymore. And when I was in my 40s, maybe early 50s, I was still doing that, still covering clubs for newspapers.
Oh, no kidding.
And you know, I don't know if you know this, Paul, but, you know, bands sometimes don't even start until 1 or 2 in the morning these days. I just didn't want to deal with that anymore. You know, plus, you know, my interest had broadened also.
Yeah.
I learned so much about the arts and about community and about how community and the arts work together. And I found it fascinating. When we came back to St. Pete in 2014, we were living in Savannah. I was
staying
for Connect Savannah, which is the kind of creative loafing up there, and starting to feel a little aged out of doing bands and bars. And really fascinated, drawn by theater and visual arts. And, you know, I dare say I matured. I mean, it sounds like some kind of cheese, right? But so I was ready. When we came back to St. Petersburg, there were other reasons why I wanted to come back, but came back here. I was just ready to apply what I had learned over the years to my hometown. The Times, I will tell you, would never hire me. I mean, I tried for years. Hey, give me, you did it, and you know, whatever the reason, it's probably a good thing. I learned in the trenches, you know. So when we came back here and suddenly the Catalyst situation opened up, I was just ready to do it here. And the short answer, as opposed to the long answer I just gave you to your question, which is the vintage St. Pete stories that I write have been a wonderful outlet for me to learn about my own memories of this town. Some of which are most of which are bright and happy and wonderful, and learning about the history of what is Jungle Prada, you know, learn about the history of tourism, you know. I wrote
Tiki Gardens, yeah.
Tiki Gardens and the aquarium and the London Wax Museum. Although I was talking with Chris Steinecker yesterday, who's writing the introduction for this book we're putting out.
We're supposed to talk about the book. We got a book to talk about. It's a book.
So one of the, and Chris said, you know, I guess Chris grew up here too, and he said, Tiki Gardens, man, it was so boring. It was a place where your grandma took you. And I said, I'm going to admit to you for the first time that I never once went to Tiki Gardens, but I remembered it and I loved learning about it and I loved writing about it. And a guy named John Bortles and I, who's a Tiki Gardens expert, he went with me out to the site the city let us in to roam around behind the fence where the remains of the place are. It was fascinating. I felt like Indiana Jones. And then I got to go back and write about it. So that was fun.
That's the great thing. I had so much fun writing about my hometown, and I had enough history that when something happened, I could go, yeah, but that 10 years ago or 20 years ago, this happened.
Yeah.
And it does give you a context that I think you don't get as a national reporter. I used to parachute into towns for the papers to do some big story, but I felt like a stranger in a strange land in a way, because I was just an imposter in some way, you know?
Yeah. It's funny that one of the stories that I've done, the Vintage Series is about 40 stories, and 22 of them are in this book. One of them is about the Suncoast Seabird Sanctuary.
And Ralph Heath, right.
Full of Ralph Heath. When I got, the year I got out of high school, which was years ago, I worked for a summer as a volunteer with Ralph. This was when Ralph was at the height of his brilliance, because he is a brilliant man.
It was an amazing place in its day.
It was, and I learned so much. My daughter, who's 30, 31 now, sometimes she'll say to me, I wonder why I look in the sky and I could tell my boyfriend the difference between a bald eagle, a black vulture, and a turkey vulture, just from their silhouette in the sky. And that's because I learned all that stuff from Ralph, and told my kids over the years about it. And she knows all about different, fauna and birds of Florida. And my point was that when I went back and wrote about the seabird sanctuary and its sad decline, it's now doing better under different ownership and stuff. I remembered Ralph, and I remembered Mr. and Mrs. Heath, his parents, very, very well. Mrs. Heath was the one who got me into tortoises. They were a big turtle family, as you may know, and Mrs. Heath, in those days it was legal to have gopher tortoises on your property. She had a lot of them, and she taught me how to keep them and raise them, which I did. Again, the days when it was legal. It's not now, kids, but that's where I learned how to do that. I'm not a veterinarian or anything, but there's certain things you need to do. And I learned that from Ralph's mother. So I'm able to apply a little bit of that. I know how dedicated those people were to that place.
Yeah, I think you bring something to a story when you have some history of a place and you actually, for better or worse, you care about it. And you can look back on things that from your life that you know impact a story. Before we don't have too much time, I wanted to get your impression. You've talked to a vast number of creative folks from our area and just outside. What's your feeling of how creative people are handling this, and were there some stories that really touched you during this lockdown?
The earliest Catalyst sessions, everybody was scared. You know, I mean, we talked about what we were watching on Netflix, and there was a lot of giggling and ha-ha, and isn't this funny? But you can kind of hear it behind everyone, like, what is going to happen next? And then the evolution is really interesting. If you look at the middle ones, you know, they're starting to be hopeful. They're starting to say, well, we're going to do virtual programming. They're basically trying to claw their way out of the pit, whatever way seems to work best for them at the time. And you can see that everyone's confidence level rise. You know, again and again, the people that I would talk to numerous times, like Carla Hartley or Stephanie Gallart or David Jenkins, for example, you can see you know, their minds are always working, and it was really nice to see a little bit of hopefulness return to everyone. Matthew McGee was on a couple times, again, as we talked about, and the first one, he was maybe the second guest after you.
And, I think he was second. I watched that.
And he's talking about, I'm having to do auditions online. I don't know what's going to happen, but I'm starting to feel that there is a future. And I spoke to him, for the show that will have aired Thursday when people see this. I don't know, the one about War of the Worlds. And it's almost like, hey, there he is again. And that's because he's gone back to doing what he's good at and what he's passionate about and feeling useful and usefulness. I did get that, especially from actors at times. What am I supposed to do with myself? You know, if we can't perform, that's all I do.
Yeah.
I make costumes, you know, somebody would say I build sets, Jared Fox from American Stage. What am I doing? You know, it's a visual world. So it was an interesting kind of arc over time to see how, to see hope kind of coming back.
Yeah, we had Nick Najjar last Saturday doing a guitar show at the Palladium, and he stopped in mid-show and just says, I'm so emotional, I can't tell you how incredible it feels to be home playing live in front of people. And, people's lives just got taken away, especially in the creative world. We've suffered the most, I think, because of our livelihood has just been snatched. Yeah. All the things we do that makes our world.
You know, applause and appreciation, I think, is validation for a lot of people. And, you know, in visual artists like to make sales, and, you know, basically it's a show and tell business, you know, not even coming into the economics of the whole thing, which is another discussion entirely. But Nate and Daniela were on, I think, twice on the Catalyst sessions. And, you know, playing virtually is not the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like Rob Astori and Rebecca Pulley, you know, be sitting on the couch and playing, they sound great. You know, or I had Ken and Andrew from Sister Hazel on, you know, mm-hmm. from out of town. It was one of the out of town ones. And they sounded great, but at the same time, you can sort of tell that it's not really the same for them. And, but I was just glad that we were able to be there and connect everybody. One thing you haven't asked me, I don't know what your time's looking like, but why we're ending?
I'm curious. I mean, I kind of thought maybe you'd talk to everyone twice, but why are you ending? See, you asked, you didn't know the answer.
Well, it just seemed like time. It seemed like the right time. And I think for one reason, yeah, we were starting to repeat, which was fine. You know, we weren't repeating every day. I mean, there were a couple of the last couple of weeks, it was five new people each, you know, for the whole week. So it was starting to I don't think that was a factor so much as, are we still contributing, you know, to get up and move around and do things? And I think it had lived its life. Its sense of purpose was kind of done. And the other factor, as I mentioned before, is that I'm just, suddenly there are more things to write about. You started putting shows on again. God, I got to write about them, you know? So I just this week or last week started doing that, your weekend arts forecast again.
Right.
And plus, you know, the narrative was getting, it's COVID, what are we doing, it's awful. It's like I don't want to keep repeating that narrative over and over again, because I think we are, wherever we are in COVID, I think we're coming around another corner. Let's keep the Catalyst sessions as something we did when we really needed it,
right?
And I don't have a lot of time anymore. You know, I do a lot of editing here at the Catalyst. I edit all the podcasts and stuff. And I was, you know, I'd be working on something and suddenly I have to stop because I'm going to record at 2:00 and I have to take at least a half an hour and refresh my research. And, you know, and then the processing the videos and getting them on YouTube. It was just time. I just wanted to say that really for anybody who's watching that nobody sort of said, hey, Bill, you suck, get out, we're tired of you. Although maybe you were thinking that.
I wasn't thinking that, but I was thinking, I do think the scenario needs to change a little bit. Yeah. Even though we're still dealing with a pandemic and still dealing with a lot of things. I mean, it's very hard for us to put on a show still, and we're still constricted. But I think that initial mindset, we've maybe moved beyond some of that. Yeah. I do think you ought to think about keeping this format occasionally. The conversation on Zoom, I think, is a good format for you know, I love meeting some of the people that I kind of knew, thought I knew, but once I heard you talk to them, I learned a lot more about them. So I wouldn't get rid of the format, but maybe you don't need to be doing it in quite the same intensity. Maybe once, a couple of times a month, I wouldn't mind seeing an interview show. And, you know, I'm always available, Bill, if you, you know.
Oh, you're my first. And if you remember when we hit 30 shows, you were 32. And but, you're going to be a-
I love meeting these people. Go ahead. I'm to cut you off.
I was just going to say you were going to be number 100 too, but you know, I heard from Ephraim Sykes and I thought, you know,
yeah. Ephraim needs a little, I can't take all the glory. Ephraim needs a little glory. You know, he's got a talent. He's got some talent.
I think, you know, we've all, something that's come up a lot is that we've all learned a little bit about this kind of technology by default, really. And so I think that, yeah, we'll do something like this again.
I think these longer conversations, especially going back through some of them the last couple of days to prep for this, again, people that I think I know, but through the course of watching a conversation, I learned things about them that I didn't know, and maybe I only know them in a one-dimensional way. So it's got value. I think it's been a great run. I congratulate you and the Catalyst for putting the resources into it and giving up your day every day. That's the number just staggers me that you hit that many in the course of the last.
Same reason. I mean, it's nice to have a paycheck, et cetera, et cetera.
It's true.
But, you know, I feel so connected, especially now after 140 shows. I feel even more connected than I was to St. Petersburg and its arts community. And I am grateful, absolutely grateful for the opportunity. What's most important, I see you looking at the clock, which means we're probably done.
Well, I'm actually looking at one of my favorite, I wrote a few quotes, a couple of Bill quotes. Oh. And one thing that I loved was you said to someone, "I will say in all blissful ignorance that I don't know what you're talking about," which I thought was a classic line from an interview.
Say that, right? Or an idiot.
Or just whatever. But I thought it was so impressive. I think when you look back at what this was, that it went from like Chick Corea to the Gulfport Art Walk, and each one of them got their own moment and were important in that moment. So I congratulate you on pulling it off and having a good run. And
I enjoyed it a lot, and you know, it's never been about me. And so I'm, thanks for the time. Thanks for doing this. To let me come on here and, you know, blow hot air for a while, you know.
Well, we'll thank our pal Jeremy Douglas, who said that we ought to do this as the closing one. Good idea.
Man, do I get producer credit on this? Yes, you do. Okay.
Jeremy gets producer credit. That's it.
Absolutely. Paul, thank you.
Bill, it's been great, and I look forward to whatever happens next, and good luck with the book.
Yeah.
What's it called?
It's called St. Pete, the Golden Age of Tourism and More. And we're going to hope to get it out by Christmas. I don't know if we're going to do that, but it's full color. It's hardcover. It's going to be a thing of beauty. It's got all kinds of wax museum pictures and bounty. It's all of that stuff. And
Coming out of St. Petersburg Press.
Sorry?
Coming out of St. Petersburg Press.
St. Petersburg Press. That's exactly right.
I like that press. Hey, Bill, good luck and everything. Have a great weekend.
Hey, you too, buddy. We'll see you around soon, okay?
All right.
From stpetecatalyst.com.